I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, genius, philosopher king, philosopher queen, working class hero. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, progressive utopian, sitting there by yourself with no sense of humor. Don't sulk. Wake up. It's us. It's Mark Riley and Mark Maron here in the morning on Morning Sedition. Morning Sedition, the facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. Good morning to you, Mark Riley. You see, I'm using my Dan Ingram trick.
Using the Arthur Godfrey trick. The ghost of Arthur Godfrey is floating over our elevated bunker.
The legacy of Dan Ingram and Arthur Godfrey playing through me by being intimate, Kimo Sabe. Good morning, Kimo Sabe.
Hey, you know, it was Arthur Godfrey was one of the shows on the radio the day I had to sit in front of a bowl of oatmeal all day because I refused to eat it. I remember every disc jockey, every radio personnel, because that's all I did, was sit and listen to the radio whole day.
Was that your cathartic moment with Radio Mark Riley when you were sitting there being punished, sitting by yourself, looking at a bowl of oatmeal, getting hard,
yes,
listening to all this radio, and you're like, wow, this is my escape. This is how I get out.
Hey, do you know who was on that
who?
Day? Claude Kirshner, Don Kirshner's father, used to have a show on WCBS.
Well, I would never know that.
I know. Neither would anybody else under the age of 50.
Was that like 1940?
No, man. It was 1957, 58, somewhere around in there.
The birth of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I was around those days.
I wasn't allowed to listen to rock and roll. There used to be a station called WMGM that used to do rock and roll, and of course, later WABC, which is where your man Dan Ingram came from. But originally, WMGM used to do a top 40 countdown. But my parents wouldn't let me listen to rock and roll for a long time. I used to have to sneak off.
Oh, really?
And I conned them to get me a transistor radio.
You had to sneak off to listen to rock and roll? What kind of music did you listen to in the Riley household?
My father was into classical.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was what he was. My mother was a communist, so she used to listen to talk.
<You know>? Classical and talk?
Well, I mean, you know, in those days, they had 15-minute radio shows. So you had, like, a whole bunch of these. You had Claude Kirshner and Arthur Godfrey, and this one did a fix-up show, and this one did a show for housewives in the middle of the day. There were all of these different shows that would be on.
I know Dan Ingram, I think, the other night at the Air Awards told every old radio story that has ever been told.
Yeah.
In his acceptance speech, which lasted, I think, 7 hours.
Well, yeah,
but it was kind of interesting. He definitely, you know, I learned a little something about you know, what I'm part of right now, and I definitely learned that it's a whole other world, and it's it was pretty exciting. My father turned me on to a Wolfman Jack and a lot of the oldies when I was a kid. Like I grew up in, I guess it was like the early 70s. He would play all these. You know, Buddy Holly was a huge Buddy Holly fan.
Okay.
He had the soundtrack of American Graffiti. And he plowed that through my head.
Could you get the Wolfman in Albuquerque?
No, but my dad told me about him, and then we used to listen to the American Graffiti soundtrack, and I got hip to him. And then when I saw American Graffiti, I got hip to him like that. And my dad was like a window in to my old man's soul, you know, with the.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing about the Wolfman was he used to broadcast from Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a whole outlaw thing about the fact that he didn't broadcast in the States for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. He would broadcast just over the Mexican border on a radio station that was not limited by the FCC in terms of its power.
Yeah,
so this thing would go all up and down the West Coast.
He was broadcasting now, be like, "This is the Wolfman. I want to say hi to you, Border Patrol militia.
Yep.
Sitting out there on the border. Oh, good luck getting those guys." Wolfman Jack talking to the militia.
Yep, that's exactly. I mean, radio was a heck of a thing, but that was my first. Real radio experience, and it was really more about the oatmeal for me because I wasn't eating that stuff.
But it sunk in. You and your contempt for your oatmeal were open to the world of radio, and I think that was the point of change. We want to tell you that the Pope's funeral is ongoing. I think this is what, day 9 of Popapalooza out at the Vatican. I don't want to be disrespectful. I kind of do, but you know.
I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to feel. I mean, they're in the middle of doing this communion. The communion is going to last until like noon Eastern or something.
I think it's done. The final rites are done, and now this is the big celebration. They're all just you know, standing around the box saying their prayers. This is some deep magic, man. This is some age old stuff. Who even knows what rituals are yet to take place?
How do they decide who gets communion at a papal funeral? I guess we'd have to ask a Catholic.
I guess when the keg runs out, that's it.
No,
you know what
no,
I mean? Am I wrong? But you know, it's weird. It's the Pope's room, but it's almost like a celebration on TV. They're those guys with the big foam fingers, and a couple of guys wearing big Pope hats. And
I'm
kidding.
Those are the Cardinals.
I'm just being disrespectful.
Oh, that's what I'm doing.
I'm being disrespectful. I got in the spirit. I was looking at this this new copy. There's a magazine that you can get, Jeff Magazine, which is like sort of old school, tasteless humor, kind of like Spy Magazine, National Lampoon Magazine.
Yeah.
Got, right here on the cover, they got Michael Jackson with some instead of the face mask,
yeah.
like a little boy's Hanes underwear.
Oh, man.
I know.
Terrible.
But you know what? It's funny. I miss the tasteless humor. I like the tasteless humor. I like I like things that don't abide by any moral standards. In terms of being funny, a lot of people will condescend to it and call it sophomoric or crass, but I think it's important to blow through your brain like that. Personally, I grew up with it, you know what I mean?
I know. National Lampoon.
Do you remember the original Lampoon?
Let me tell you something.
What?
The greatest magazine cover I ever saw was the Lampoon cover. I think it was in 75.
I remember, if you don't buy this magazine,
they will shoot this dog. And they
got the revolver with the dog looking over like,
nah. Yeah. And, you know, for a long time, that was the biggest selling issue of the National Lampoon.
Hey, I thought the National Lampoon was great. It's an important style of humor to just be completely crass and tasteless. I think we're going to do more of that here.
Not crass and tasteless, not us.
But not sophomoric, but, you know, just sort of mind-blowing. Why not? I don't know why people don't make themselves more available to the mind-blowing humor. Why do people have to condescend the funny? You know, it's a weird thing. It's like that slippery slope of indecency. It's like the slippery slope that we're going to talk about in terms of, like, this new law that Jeb Bush wants to pass down in Florida to allow anybody who has a gun to go ahead and shoot people if they think they're being threatened without, you know, even trying to avert it
mitigate
or run away.
Circumstance.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, what is a threat? What is indecency? What is funny? These are, you know, what is morality on some level? These are sort of, personal, there's a personal element there.
Yeah.
It's not a subjective thing. I mean, some morality is obviously subjective, but, you know.
Look, I used to get slack. For not just for reading the National Lampoon.
I did the thing again. I got to be aware of that. I'm going to watch
it.
About
that. Right. But they used to have a thing called Underwear for the Deaf, which was one of my favorite. They used to do
remember that. It was like a photo thing.
Yeah,
right?
I used to think that was hilariously funny, and no one else I knew thought it was.
That's the weird thing about humor. Who the hell knows? You know,
yeah.
who can make a collective assumption to decide what's funny for everybody? That's why you have, that's why Yes Dear is popular.
Yeah.
You know, someone has made a decision that that's funny for everybody, and it's got to be the worst show on television. I mean, you know what I mean? Over and over again, the same crap. Almost every sitcom, is by and large the same crap. There's a context, and there's a very narrow, idea of what is funny, and it seems to work because people are sort of brainwashed, and they just let it feed over them. Obviously, some of them tank, but, man, the collective idea of funny is ridiculous.
Hey, there's a great sitcom coming out tomorrow.
Oh.
You have to watch it.
What?
Prince Charles's Wedding.
Is that the beginning of tomorrow's the pilot episode?
Yeah.
Hey, look, today's Tom DeLay's birthday. We're going to spend some time giving him some birthday gifts in the way that we are capable of, but here's this first.
He's one of the most powerful men in Washington.
It's beneath contempt.
Famous for his aggressive bare-knuckle style of politics.
If we do not act, she will die of thirst.
Tom DeLay faces investigations in Washington and Texas.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral, universal, and I believe the source of our greatness.
Government watch groups are stepping up their calls for Tom DeLay to resign his post as majority leader.
The abuses we've seen in recent days do not reflect the views, policies, or fabric of this nation.
$57,000 all-expense-pay trip may have been funded by lobbyists, which is against the rules.
Is it ethical?
Three of DeLay's associates have been indicted.
Accusations of illegal campaign fundraising and improper ties to lobbyists.
We have the truth on our side.
Third DeLay trip that has been called into question.
And it is the truth.
Connection with illegal fundraising.
That will win us this argument.
Two campaign organizations that financed his re-election paid $500,000 to his wife and daughter.
Is it ethical?
I feel great about it.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral and the certain knowledge that we are all ultimately responsible for our actions.
Yes, it's 15 past the hour. We're going to have more on the DeLay Gate, the Martinez Memo. There's still a war going on in Iraq. We're going to talk about that. We're going to have funny, too. It's Friday, folks. It's Tom DeLay's birthday. We'll talk to you in a second on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Man, I feel like I got hit in the head. Friday. I'm gonna relax. I'm not gonna freak out. We can relax a little bit. It's Friday, right?
We can relax.
All right, man. I just don't know. It was one of those mornings. I got up, thought I got hit in the head, and I get here. Kayla's got the Mad Cow Twizzlers going. The big bag of jerky sticking in my face. Now Brendan Peter and McDonald's chomping on the jerky. Everybody's looking to create a rope in their colon out of cow tissue. I'm not going to judge. My wife is telling me now, it's like, maybe you should stop being a vegetarian, Mark. Maybe you're backed up. Maybe there's too much dairy in your life. Because I've been complaining a little bit. I've been feeling a little thick, a little doughy, too much starch. You know what I'm saying, Kalo? Should I start eating the meat again? She's like, why can't you have a turkey sandwich? It's always nice when your loved one supports you a little bit. I love her.
But does your wife ever worry about her weight?
No.
Wow, so she's like the man, and you're very much the woman.
Very much the woman?
Well,
wait, now, look, let me just say. Happy birthday to Jackie, your girlfriend. I just want to say
yes, happy birthday, Jackie.
Also, happy birthday to Mare, one of our original bloggers.
Oh, yeah.
It's her birthday as well.
Oh, wow.
Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman's birthday is on Sunday. It's a big birthday weekend. My wife's birthday's next week. Yes, she's the man. So what?
And
is that a
delay.
Problem? At least I am open enough to understand that I needed a woman that was tough. A little butch, you know what I mean? There's nothing
she
wrong with
that. Sleep,
she doesn't look butch.
What?
She doesn't look butch at all.
So she's so hot, but she's wearing the pants a little bit, but I'm not ashamed of that. She's taller than me, for God's sakes. And one of the reasons that she doesn't worry about her weight is that she's smoking the ciggies, man. And there's nothing I can do to stop it. Ciggies, built-in weight control. When you have cigarettes and coffee for breakfast... You understand? That's my wife's diet, is she'll eat around 4 the rest of the day, cigarettes and coffee.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I know that diet. I lived that diet.
Yeah, I did too. What a great diet that was. You're all jammed up. You're like, hey, I'm awake. I'm going. Man, I used to have like 3 espressos in the morning, five cigarettes, and you have that initial like, yeah! And then all of a sudden, like, oh my God, I need a nap. You depleted your entire days of energy just processing toxins.
Well, see, you end up then having, by the time you're 33, 34, you realize you can't do that forever.
Yeah, when you wake up and you hear this.
Yep.
Anyways, so let's, here's something. You guys remember Iraq?
Where?
Yeah, there's apparently still problems in Iraq. It's amazing all the stuff that's been going on in the media here in the States. No coverage, and big stuff is going on. There's still, American soldiers dying. There's still profound attacks, and they've got a new prime minister.
Well, what's amazing about this, Mark, last Saturday, a group of insurgents attacked Abu Ghraib. Not just, not the Baghdad Civic Center, a stadium where they play. Abu Ghraib, the most well-known place in Iraq outside of the city of Baghdad. But most Americans don't know that these insurgents attack.
Be honest with you, I didn't know till this morning.
Yeah.
And if I don't know, it's not like I'm on the pulse of the planet, but, we do get a lot of information, and we have spent, hours and hours talking about the situation and characterizing the insurgency and talking about the day-to-day events that go on in Iraq, and it got by me too, Riley, and there's something else going on, is that, you've been talking about this, for months, about the issue of how are they going to accommodate the Kurds in the new government, and now we got some big news.
Well, yeah, we have a new president. That's I shouldn't say we have a new president. There is a new president in Iraq. I only wish we had a new president.
Yeah, I know, got excited there for a second. I'm really out of the loop.
Well, Jalal Talabani took the oath of office yesterday, and of course, Talabani then announced the nomination of Ibrahim al-Jafari, who is the leader of the Islamic Dawah Party, which is a Shiite element. And he is going to be the prime minister. Now, the prime minister is the one with the power. The presidency is pretty much ceremonial. However, Talabani's position here is going to be to try and get some degree of further autonomy for the Kurds. The Kurds want their own thing. They know now, I think, realistically, that they're not going to get back for nationhood. But they want a measure of sovereignty, perhaps, that the rest of Iraq doesn't have. And they want the Arabs that Saddam Hussein put into Kirkuk. Now, Kirkuk is a big issue because there's a lot of oil underneath it.
Yeah.
They want those Arabs, out of 100,000 Arabs Saddam Hussein brought into Kirkuk, he called it Arabization.
So do you think that this new prime minister is part of his agenda, is going to start kicking Arabs out of his of his section of the country, of his...
Now, Talabani doesn't have the power to do that as president, but he will be one of the people that will be up in Jafari's ear saying, you know what, we need to accomplish this, we need to do something about this. One of the things I'm getting from the reports on this transition, because remember now, this was... At convocations of the 275-member National Assembly who were elected this past January. But one thing I'm getting from this, Mark, is that Iraqi democracy, such as it is going to be very different than American democracy. This National Assembly, you know, a couple of times, according to reports, this thing almost degenerated into chaos over the course of these meetings. Well, that may be the way Iraqi democracy works. When we look at the British House of Commons, and we hear people yelling and screaming and all that, we figure, well, it's Britain, so we've got to figure it's somewhat similar. But it seems very different than the kind of democracy we see on the halls of the U.S. Congress.
That's right. There's debate, and it sounds like you're talking about debate. Here we just have senators like Cornyn getting up on the podium
and
in the House
stupid.
And telling that, trying to instigate violence against the judicial branch of this country.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we have. I mean, in these new democracies and in this old parliamentary democracy like England, you actually have engagement and actual issues being discussed, not a bunch of, sort of fanatics trying to hijack the government and push the judiciary into a dangerous place.
Guess who was watching on TV yesterday as all of this unfolded?
Who?
Saddam Hussein himself.
Could you imagine
that? He was watching his replacement being sworn in.
He's probably sitting there thinking, when are they going to give you my clothes?
Yeah.
I must go out there. They're about to announce my name.
Either that or they're going to take me out and shoot me. He thought when they first captured him that that's what there wouldn't be no trial.
What is going to happen with that guy? Do you have any speculation on that, Ryan?
Maybe 2010, 2012, around the time of the Olympics, they'll sentence him.
That's it?
I don't know. At this point, Lord knows what they're going to do with Saddam. Let's hope that he is the recipient of justice. We're going to come right back. We've got a lot more for you. We're going to talk a little bit about Mel Martinez. You don't know who he is? Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
What's the real scandal? 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio. It's morning sedition. We are now going to sort of deconstruct the political agenda of a certain faction of the Republican, of the GOP, their desire to exploit and work in collusion with the religious right to undermine the U.S. judiciary, the judiciary branch of the government. But I want to, we're going to talk about the Martinez memo. We're going to explain all that to you just in a second. But Tom DeLay, who we're going to talk to more about today, is under so much fire because there's just scandals turning up everywhere. There was a report yesterday that his daughter's baby shower was paid for by Reliant Energy, which was a group that gave Tom DeLay a tremendous amount of money from Texas. Now, this is coming off the wires right now. It appears that DeLay is coming under scrutiny for apparently someone from the asbestos lobby paid for his trip to the bathroom this morning. Yeah, it's just awful. This guy will take money for just about anything, and we're just trying to keep our finger on the pulse of that. Now, Mel Martinez, Senator Mel Martinez from Florida, is the former U.S. Housing and Urban Development Secretary. He was encouraged by the White House behind the scenes to seek the Senate seat in Florida. Martinez had ruled out running for Senate, but White House strategists urged him to run, banking on his Cuban heritage to bring them a win. Now, Ken Connor is the conservative activist who initially came up with the idea of congressional intervention in the Schiavo case, and this was years ago.
Now, and it's also interesting that Connor himself thought about running for that same Senate seat. It was a seat that was previously occupied by Bob Graham, the Democrat. Connor also used to head Florida's chapter of the Family Research Council until 2003.
Okay, so now it's all starting to come together.
Yeah.
The crystal fascist zombie brigades, the government, you know, the Florida, you know, legal system, the Florida government. Connor was Mel Martinez's college roommate at Florida State University. All right. Brian Darling, who is the supposed fall guy. But he's also the author of the, you know, he's the guy that put together these talking points that we're talking about, the Martinez memo. Brian Darling is Martinez's chief legal counsel and he's one who wrote the talking points memo, the Martinez memo. Darling is part of the Alexander Strategy Group, a firm created by who? Tom DeLay.
Chief and his people.
Yeah, Ed Buckham. And, okay, so this is like another think tank, a Republican think tank organization, a front group, part of the neocon death cult, Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade. Tom DeLay used the talking points at least on three occasions. Now, what's going on here is that, you know, the talking points basically said about Schiavo that this is a great political issue. All right, this is it. We've got to jump on this and exploit it. This is a culture of death. Let's take, you know, the brain dead woman. And they obviously knew, like this guy Connor knew in 98 that we got to get on this because there's a good chance that this woman is going to be in this state for as long as we can hold her there, as long as we can use it, as long as we can exploit it. And now we want to use it to try to overthrow the judiciary branch of this government. This is a group of anti-American, anti-constitutional traitors who want to usurp the only existing branch of government that is, you know, is actually keeping democracy, you know, in place a little bit. Whatever democracy we have left, this is the one part of the check and balance system that is actually doing its job because they are not subject to elections. So now these guys, by exploiting the Christian right and working in collusion with them, are trying to overthrow the judiciary branch of this government. Now the memo, this is very interesting because you can see a history of right-wing lies. These guys are shameless liars, and any time that, you know, you come in contact with a conservative or a Republican that's spewing talking points, you can pretty much assume they're lying because they're shameless about it. Not many of them do any of their own thinking. They just take it off the radio. And let's just go down this list here, because when this memo came out, immediately, people like Senator Robert F. Bennett, a Republican from Utah, said that the issue stinks of a news fabrication similar to the one that engulfed Dan Rather. Quote, as far as I'm concerned, it is an invention of the press. Quote, it's Rathergate all over again, and the same vigilant entities that brought about to the collapse of CBS News can now also cause heads to roll among Democratic Senate leadership staffers and further shame multiple news organizations that it would appear to have fallen for another document hoax. That's from the American Spectator. Now, you see, they just immediately started characterizing this as a lie. They started to set a frame that they drew upon the Rathergate frame, which is not even clear that that was really a fabrication as far as I can tell. And now you have people like Accuracy in Media. They question the authenticity of the memo. This is March 24th. Parts of the memo had also been posted on the Traditional Values Coalition website as part of Martinez's press release about Schiavo. All right. James Lafferty, consultant to the Traditional Values Coalition, said that he believed that a liberal political operative took parts of the Martinez release, added the political references, and then pawned it off to the media as an official GOP Senate document. I see it as a dirty trick, Lafferty said. Tucker Carlson,
Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, The American Spectator, and dozens of conservative blogs all came together to try and make this Rather the Second, or Son of Rather. And what they, you know, what they obviously didn't count on was the fact that one of their own, Mel Martinez, with help, I think, from Tom DeLay. You think it's an accident, Mark Maron, that both Mel Martinez and Tom DeLay are getting the communion wafers over in the Vatican right about now?
Yeah, they're getting communion wafers, and they're also getting a talking to in terms of, you know, how they're going to, how is Tom DeLay going to step down as majority leader? This is what, you know, this is the best we can hope for, you know, because this alliance that they've created with the religious right and this, you know, attempt on behalf of this group of traitors, these anti-American, anti-constitutional senators, congressmen, and religious fanatic operatives are trying to, you know, undermine the judiciary branch of the government. And now you have Martinez, you know, after he's guilty. He's guilty. Okay, granted, it came out of his office by this guy Darling, created the memo, gave it to Martinez, who gave it to Tom Harkin, who distributed it to the Senate, and now that he's caught, you know, they can make Darling the fall guy, but Martinez cannot say what he did say. He basically said, quote, Senator Martinez has never seen the memo and condemns its sentiments. No one in our office has seen it, nor had anything to do with its creation, end quote. That's the spokesman for him, and that was just the
other day. Well, that's pretty obviously a lie at this point. family.
Yeah, but that's just it. And like, these people are shameless. How can they, you know, how can they even say that? And then, you know, to see that all these idiots, Rush Limbaugh, you know, American Spectator, they all just got on board to try and generate a frame. And this is, you know, this is how they do it. They keep repeating and repeating and repeating until people assume it's true. People who don't want to do the investigation, or people that believe in their side, even without, you know, trying to define the integrity of their side.
Now, let's say for a moment that Mel Martinez is totally innocent here, and that Mel Martinez had no knowledge, whatever. If that's true, then Mel Martinez is the dumbest elected official ever in the history of American politics. This is a man who took this sheet from somewhere, we're not really sure, supposedly had no idea what it contained, and handed it to a colleague.
Mm-hmm.
That's his words. That's not my words.
Right, and right here, Iowa Democratic Senator Tom Harkin said in an interview that Martinez handed him the memo on the Senate floor, okay, in hopes of gaining support for the bill.
And if Mel Martinez is innocent, he didn't know what he was giving the man.
Yeah, right. You know, so why are you handing it out?
With a flyer for the Senate softball game?
Yeah. Yeah. Why are you giving it to people if you don't know what, you know, if you don't know what's in it? He knew what was in it, and you can't. These guys just think that they can, you know, they can just bail out by saying I don't know. But it's crazy. It's just crazy. And then they'll accuse Democrats of being, you know, political. I hope to God that we had something to do with this. Anytime they say that, just say, well, thank you. I really hope we're that organized. I hope that this is an attack, and it is an effective political attack for these guys to claim, you know, victimness, like they're under attack for any reason, is ridiculous. I hope that the Democrats are being that organized, but these guys are burning themselves because they're getting sloppy, they're overreaching, they're completely full of arrogance and pride and no respect for the senatorial process or the congressional process, the legislative process at all, and they're clearly, you know, just trying a full press, you know, to overthrow the judiciary branch of this government by using momentum from the religious right. I don't understand why religious people, or people that claim to be religious, these fake Christians of the Christo-fascist zombie brigades, you know, don't wake the hell up and realize, or maybe they just want to be part of that. Maybe they want to, you know, restrict everybody's rights. They want to restrict everyone's constitutional rights. They want to be part of an anti-American, anti-constitutional, crypto-fascist momentum in this country. Maybe that's what makes them proud.
We need to be very clear as progressives exactly how this memo was undercut. The Martinez memo was undercut by the conservative media that's out here and is doing this. Now, this started, and I would refer people to Media Matters for America, where they did a thing called Dissecting a Right-Wing Smear. Between March 19th, when the first blog / media reports questioning the contents of the memo started to come out, through April 6th, which Mark Maron was just a couple of days ago,
I know,
we saw this constant drumbeat. We saw Michelle Malkin. We saw the Howard Kurtz, who ought to know better, by the way. Bill Bennett, my good friend.
Yeah, right.
Republican.
Big fan of Mark Riley.
Yeah,
Bill,
I don't know why. Yeah. Wes Vernon from Newsmax. Fred Barnes from the Weekly Standard. All of these conservative gas bags all came together to undercut the credibility of this memo. And I'm beginning to wonder, Mark, quite frankly, whether or not they knew ahead of time that Martinez had distributed the memo and they were just trying to cover his butt.
God, you know, it's like, Riley, if they are that, you know, if they know that the memo's going to go out and they put in position these lies, that's a type of deviousness that you got to almost, like, respect for its evil. You've got to be, you know, you almost got to say, well, if they're that on top of the game, man, that is unbelievable.
Hey, you know who understands this kind of deviousness?
Who?
Pimps and hustlers.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Dealers. Drug dealers. Mm-hmm. Guys who sell dope on the corner. They understand this
three
kind
or four
of
steps ahead.
Yeah.
They got point guys.
Yeah. You got people out there, and if they go down, you get 20 more 15-year-olds to go out in the street and do it.
What I don't understand is why people, you know, the sort of the followers of this group can't see themselves, can't wake up and realize that this group is fundamentally anti-constitutional, anti-American, and willing to shamelessly exploit, you know, people's tragedies, you know, in order to, you know, move themselves forward politically and bring all those people with them, all these adepts, these
they
followers,
care not.
These minions.
They care not. You know why they care not? Because these people are trying to reinforce the existing construct of these supporters and followers. All right? These people have certain things in their mind. And this whole right-wing media empire has been created to reinforce, to make them feel good about themselves, to make them feel comfortable with the fact that, yeah, we're fighting a war in Iraq. Mm. Yeah, we're going to change Social Security. Yeah, we're going to do all these different things. Why? Because it's part and parcel of how these people plan to change the country. And it's ugly. And, you know, there's another thing, which we'll probably get into next week, that it really gets into the idea of how the country is going to be changed no matter what any of us do. But that's another story for another day.
Well, let's take a break here. And when we come back, let's really sort of explore this culture of death because, you know, as you said, many of these guys were over in Rome right now trying to get a little sort of a contact morality buzz, proximity
Absolution.
High off of the death of the Pope, you know, and most of the people that follow people like Tom DeLay. People, these evangelical fake Christians of the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigades are not really, you know, Christians at all, and on top of that, can't stand Catholics. This is all a big, big scam, and these guys need to go down because they're trying to take over the country, and they are it is a coup, and it is part of a, you know, collective attempt on behalf of these anti-American, anti-constitutional traitors like Tom DeLay to usurp the judiciary branch. And let's stay on top of that. 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. There's the fax machine with the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down, folks. Here are your marching orders for today. One, protest this weekend's Masters Golf Tournament. White guys, Georgia, Masters. It's wrong on so many levels. Two, buy tickets for upcoming Springsteen solo tour, even though he kind of dropped the ball on the whole Kerry thing. Three, call up CNN and say sarcastically, gee, would you guys do something on the Pope? He's dead, you know. Four, celebrate Mathematics Education Month with this story problem. If the administration panders to the religious right to the nth degree, minus a sense of shame, plus a sense of righteous entitlement, how bad will things get in Bush's second term? Five, phrase of the day, just drop this into conversation. Gas prices are so high, we can't afford to drive the Republicans out of Congress in 2006, man. Wake up, sheeple. We're going to have to drag them out of office on public transportation. Get on the bus. On the bus, that was way off. I just tried to throw that in the garbage. Look, Senator Cornyn, yes, John Cornyn from Texas. Chris, let's just recap how this guy tried to initiate violence against judges in this country, this traitor, this anti-American.
And finally, I don't know if there is a cause and effect connection, but we have seen some recent episodes of courthouse violence in this country. Certainly nothing new, but we seem to have run through a spate of courthouse violence recently that's been on the news. And I wonder whether there may be some connection between the perception in some quarters on some occasions where judges are making political decisions yet are unaccountable to the public, that it builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where some people engage in violence.
Yeah, right. Why don't you activate some strange, you know, fake Christian, fascist, Manchurian candidate psychopaths to go kill judges? These guys, you know, these conservatives or these Republicans, these anti-American traitors who say that they're anti-judiciary activism are encouraging the worst type of judiciary activism. These guys who say they are for states' rights are, you know, transgressing. They are overriding states' rights. They're trying to infuse a pipe, you know, a tube of Jesus into the governmental system of this country. And Cornyn's just trying to back out now, huh, Riley?
He's trying to back out, but you know what he's doing? He's trying to hide behind the alleged collegial nature of the Senate, What he's saying is, well, I wouldn't think anybody, because remember, he said it's on the Senate floor. Okay,
yeah.
Empty Senate floor, but still a Senate floor. So what he's doing is saying, well, I wouldn't think that anybody would take, any of my colleagues, my good friends, would take my words out of context and use them against me. Nobody did that, but that's a nice way to frame the discussion. Now he's saying, and by the way, see, this is the world in which we live.
Yeah.
The guy turns around 48 hours after he says this, and says, well, I, too, have a concern about overheated rhetoric regarding judges.
What an idiot. Look at this. Let's quote him. Quote, the lesson I learned is that Washington's a very tough political environment. If people can take what you say out of context and use it against you, they will. Oh, poor John. Right, and then he says, I guess the other lesson I learned was not to wonder aloud on the Senate floor. Yeah, especially if you're, you know, wondering, you know, traitorous things and instigating people to kill judges. Cornyn stressed in his speech, quote, was unrelated to anything that either Congressman Delay or the Terry Schiavo case, end quote. Liar! I mean, this guy is in complete, you know, collusion. Is that the word I keep using?
Collusion is the right word.
The right word with Tom Delay, with the Martinez memo, with this whole momentum towards, you know, these, and the JCCR, the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration, this is all the same momentum. These are a bunch of traitors. They're a bunch of anti-American, anti-constitutional, you know, it's a cabal. It's not even one use the word cabal. It's a concerted effort on behalf of a renegade strand of the Republican Party that is trying to overthrow the one branch of government that is still checking and balancing what little democracy have left. That's the judiciary. These guys are liars. They're hypocrites. They're anti-constitutional. They're anti-American. They're criminals. And I tried to get some justice. I tried to solve this problem. I made some phone calls.
Yes, you
know,
did make some phone calls
yesterday, but this thing still went without a hitch, I guess. Today's the second day, actually. It's going to go on today. It went on yesterday. The Judeo Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration. Tom DeLay had a bail on his headliner post. He was going to headline this thing. Apparently, he sent a video to.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that when we come back as well.
Well, you know, Cornyn, the scariest thing about Cornyn is he's on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's the guy that's passing on Bush's judicial nominations. He's the guy who's going to say what kind of judges we will have in the future. And, you know, even some of these guys up until now have not been entirely reliable. Remember that many of the judges that ruled in the Schiavo case were themselves conservative Republicans.
That's right. You got Birch.
Greer.
Stanley Birch, Greer. Maybe I'll read that statement that Birch made. This is a you know, Republican-appointed judge. So was Greer. So was Kramer in San Francisco on the overriding the gay marriage thing.
The gay marriage thing, absolutely. We got some more show for you. We're going to talk about the culture
the phone
of
calls.
Death.
The phone
yes,
calls.
The phone calls. We're also going to do Rapture Watch with our good friend Cardinal Milfington, who apparently didn't go to Rome.
Mm.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses. It's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Philosophy Kings and Queens, Working Class Heroes. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley there.
Yes, it is.
Kalo on the board. Brendan P.W. McDonald at the controls. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman in New Jersey. Sunday's birthday boy, Dan Pashman. Kent the Colonel Jones. Everyone's here hanging around. It's Friday. We're trying to do it. It was a heavy first hour, Riley.
Yeah, I know. We plowed through a lot of stuff.
It's like my brain almost blew up, you know. I just went to therapy last night. I swear to God, my therapist is going to start having to pay me now.
Really?
Literally. I say, well, it's pretty much the same as last week. I'm okay. You know, I got minor aggravations. And he's like, well, tell me about the show. What have you been talking about on the show? So then I got to like go, well, it's 10 past the hour, and I'm here with my therapist, and we're, you know what I mean? So I give him the whole lowdown on that, and then we started talking about, you know, houses and owning a house and this and that. It was just a very non-therapy.
Oh, you got real estate tips, did you?
Well, no, it's sort of like we sit there and commiserate, you know? It's like 10 minutes of therapy, then like, you know, 30 minutes is sort of like, so what do you do about that? Really? So
oh, wow.
What are you invested in? Like, you know, did you put your money away? You know, it's just ridiculous. We started talking about ownership of house, and it's like you don't really own your house. When you buy a house, if you put some money down, all you really do is you've just taken on a huge amount of debt. So you're the proud owner of bank debt.
Yes.
And then if you sell your house, you make some money, but it's sort of what it does is it gets you into the debt game.
You know how you can deal with that?
What?
There is a way to get around this. And Tony Robbins didn't tell me this.
But
there is a way. When you pay your mortgage, if you pay a little bit over and then tell your bank or your broker to put that overage against the principal as opposed to the interest.
Yeah.
You pay down your stuff real fast.
I know, but then they tell you, it's like, you don't have to. What do you want to do that for? What's the point of that? Because you're like, I got ahead.
Build equity.
Well, yeah, okay, so that's what you do. So you buy a house, which means that you get a loan and you owe the bank money for your house that you're never going to pay, but it entitles you to get more money if you run out of money.
Yep.
So basically what it is you buy a house, which entitles you to get into more debt. You owe the bank money, and then if you put enough money on your house, which you're never going to really own unless, you know, you're a millionaire, you take 30 years, then all of a sudden you're entitled to get, you know, more money that you're going to owe more interest on. It's a game. It's the culture of debt. On top of it being the culture of death, which we're going to talk about in a little while. And I want to talk about this. Man, the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration Conference continues today. Now, I tried to take action around this because Tom DeLay was supposed to headline this before he went to the post funeral.
Yeah.
But secretly, it's just a meeting on Air Force One to discuss how he's going to step down as majority leader. I'm hoping. All right. But these guys are trying to usurp the judiciary branch of the government. These guys are traitors. They're anti-American. The JCCR is meeting today and yesterday, and I tried to get some action taken around it, and I made some calls. Chris?
Good morning, Homeland Security. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. My name's Mark Marin. I'm with Air America, and I got a problem. Are you guys aware that there is an anti-American splinter group gathering tomorrow in Washington, D.C.?
Can you hold, please?
Yeah.
Your call is being answered by Audix.
Law Enforcement Fusion Desk.
Is not available. Record at the tone.
Yeah, hi. There's an anti-American group that is gathering tomorrow. They're called the JCCR. They are trying to mobilize against a branch of the United States government. They're dangerous. They're meeting right there in Washington, D.C. at the Marriott Hotel. I'm freaking out a little bit. I mean, I think you guys got to get over there to at least investigate it. You should really check it out. Okay, let me know what happens. See, I knew that. They just transferred me a voicemail. I knew that was it's an ineffective operation. Let's take it to the next level. Let's call the Central Intelligence Agency.
Public Affairs.
Yeah, is this the CIA?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I'm Mark Marin. I'm calling from Air America. I just wanted to make sure that you guys knew that there was an anti-American group meeting at the Washington Marriott tomorrow. Are you familiar with the JCCR?
You don't need to call us, sir. You should call the FBI. They're the ones that deal with domestic issues.
The FBI, do you have a number?
No, I do not have, but they have an Office of Public Affairs.
You have a number for the FBI?
No, I do not have a number for the FBI.
This is the CIA, right?
Correct.
Oh, I thought you guys were communicating better now.
You just need to dial the Office of Public Affairs. I don't have the number in front of me.
That's weird. Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Good morning, FBI Washington Field.
Yeah, hi. I just was trying to report a anti-American organization.
Wait a minute, hold on. Okay, you said that again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Loud back here.
Oh. Yeah, I just wanted to know if you're familiar with the JCCR. They're meeting tomorrow at the Washington Marriott. I have a fear that they're trying to overthrow a branch of the U.S. government.
JCCR?
Yeah.
What is that?
I believe it stands for the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been talking a lot about overthrowing the judiciary branch of the government. I'm just trying to get an investigation launched because these guys, I don't know, David Gibbs, I got names, Michael
okay.
Ferris.
Okay, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New York City.
Okay. Have you called, and you said, is he at the Marriott? Which Marriott?
I think it's called the Washington Marriott. Frank Pavone, do you know that name?
No.
Do you know the name Ray Flynn?
No.
Alan Keyes?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's supposed to be there, too.
Okay.
It's crazy. You know who else was supposed to be there? Tom DeLay was going to be there, but he had to leave the country.
Mm-hmm. And how do you know this? How do you know all this information?
Because I've been told by the media.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
You're going to take care of it?
Yeah.
Oh, do I need to call the CIA?
If you want, you can. I can connect you to the CIA.
You can connect me right over to the CIA?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that'd be excellent. Because you know what? Can I just tell you? I called someone over there earlier to get your number,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't even have it.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I don't know. Okay, hold on, okay?
All right. Just going to transfer me over there. They're going to take action. This is great. I'm so sad that DeLay's not going to be there.
Good morning, CIA.
Hi, my name is Mark Marin. I'm calling from Air America because I called you guys earlier about this problem I'm having about this anti-American group, the JCCR. And when I called earlier, when someone over at your office said to call the FBI, and I asked if you guys had the number, and you didn't. And I just called the FBI, and they just connected me right to you guys. I just thought I'd let you know you guys should get that going both ways because you're supposed to be talking to each other a little better now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thanks.
Department of Justice, Operator 2, may I direct your call?
I just need to tell somebody. I already called the FBI and the CIA. There's a group, an anti-American group that's planning on overthrowing the judicial branch of the government, the JCCR. I just want to make sure you guys know about it.
Okay, so you need me to connect you to whom, sir?
I don't know who I would talk to about this, but I want justice.
All right, would you like the Criminal Correspondence Unit?
Can I talk to Alberto Gonzalez?
No, sir.
How about, is there an answering machine?
One moment.
Thanks. Music.
Attorney General's office.
Oh, do you guys, I just got transferred to you. I've called the CIA and the FBI and the Homeland Security Office. I'm just trying to let people know that the JCCR is meeting at the Washington Marriott tomorrow, and I think they're an anti-American group. Are you guys hip to that?
Just a moment, sir. I'm not sure. Hold on for a second.
Oh, this is crazy. I'm just trying to, you know. Who are we going to talk to now?
Attorney General's office.
Oh, hi. There's this meeting tomorrow of the JCCR, and I think these guys want to overthrow the judiciary branch of the government. You guys know about it, right?
You may fax something in to the Attorney General, sir. I can give you that fax number.
Oh, great. I'll just fax the announcement. I went to their website.
Sure. Let me give you that number.
Terrific. All right, and you'll give it to Alberto Gonzalez?
We'll give it to the proper officials here.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
202.
Yeah.
307.
Yeah.
Thanks. You're welcome. A lot.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I think we got it. Or at least everyone knows. Yeah, I'm glad I took action. You know, right? It feels good to take action.
Yeah.
Especially when you get follow through like that. Like, you know, we were able to just send a fax right to the Attorney General's office, which I'm sure went directly, you know, once they figured out whether or not they could trace it, went right into the shredder.
But, Mark,
what?
How did you know all that? Well, how do you know?
It's in the paper.
I follow the media.
You know, I have a shredder. Uh-oh. That I got, a personal shredder.
You bought one?
Well, yeah, I got paranoid about identity theft, but, it, you know, I emptied it yesterday, and there's a sort of weird, mischievous feeling about emptying a shredder. You're like, you know, like, man, I'm glad I shredded this stuff. This is important stuff. And I thought about the guy who's going through the garbage. He's sort of like, wow, this must be important stuff. It's very important. Things that go on in my apartment. Thank God I got a shredder. But shredder detritus, is that what you would call it? It's good. It looks like it's important.
Shred mulch.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. 16 past the hour, I am going to come back and give you the actual schedule for the Judeo-Christian Council for the Constitutional Restoration Conference today. That and more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Yesterday I cleaned my mental slate, but here we go again. This is my dream diary from last night for Friday. Today I'm at the Pope's funeral at the Vatican with my dead cat Butch. Everything is somber and hushed. All the world's dignitaries are there in dark suits. John Paul is laid out in the middle of the vast basilica. Butch leans over and says, "Can you smell it, Mark Maron? The repressed sexuality, the stifling conformity, the withered, rotting testicles of the sacrosanct. I tell you this, the dead Polish wizard is not the only stiff in this room." She lit a cigarette and said, "This charade must end." And she ran off. Always a bad sign. 2 minutes later, the room echoes with a deafening, piercing siren, and through a bullhorn, a voice yells, "Gentile degli Italiani, avanti, avanti!" Then from every corner of the Vatican, an army of Italian cats swarmed into the great marble hall, yowling and humping and hissing and slashing. 10 seconds later, troops were everywhere trying to stop the cats, who had hammers and were breaking statues and spray-painting obscene Italian graffiti on everything. Somebody cranked up loud techno music. People were screaming. screaming and crashing into each other trying to get to the exits. Amid the chaos, Butch climbs on top of John Paul's chest and yells, "Comrades, if you truly would reach paradise, forget these empty rituals and embrace the cleansing lust all around you. This is the true culture of life. If you honestly want to save yourself, rip off your clothes and join us. Let us reach heaven together." Butch grabbed John Paul's hat, put it on, and broke a popper under her nose. "The dead man, you are not the Pope of Butch." "Ah, pull up to the bumper, baby. Everybody dance." Butch ran over to George W. Bush, who was trying to escape. She bared her razor sharp claws and said, "So, little man, I hear you speak Spanish. You know the word piñata?" And then Butch slashed both of his shins wide open. W. whimpered like a little girl. Then Butch turns to Clinton, who is standing right there, and says, "Bill, join us. You know you want to." Just then a soldier got Butch in a headlock. Hissing and clawing, Butch yells, "Bill, call me. Get up off of that thing. The lights. The lights." I woke up, and my bed was filled with redemption.
Wow. You may need to go back to the therapist today to get that one done.
Bush. All right. Yeah, the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration Conference continues today. We have I have the schedule, as you know. I've been saying this and making sure it gets through, that this is a group of traitors, anti-American, anti-constitutional, a reactionary group that supports judicial activism. These are a fringe part of the conservative movement. We're trying to overthrow the judiciary branch. We're going to hear a little bit from Reverend Rick Scarborough, who spoke at this event. But I want to read to you first. I got hold of the schedule for today. 8:30 a.m. conference resumes. Invocation, Pledge of Allegiance, Ritual Disemboweling of Judge in Effigy, Coffee, and Danish. 9:15 a.m. Decline of Faith and What to Do About It. A panel of religious leaders discuss the Muslim problem and smiting the infidels. Yes. 10:30 a.m. Remedies to Judicial Tyranny. Panel discussion topics include impeachment or impalement, dead judges making it look like an accident, and mob rule, the upside.
Oh, God.
11:45 a.m. Lunch and speaker. Former Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore talks about placing the Ten Commandments everywhere. Afterwards, visit our free Ten Commandments tattoo booth. 1:45 p.m. Mobilizing the grassroots. Topic, gay agenda, the rainbow menace. 4:45 p.m. Speaker Alan Pease. Topic, turning self-hatred outward. Yeah. 5:30 p.m. Closing remarks and benediction. Candlelight ceremony. Reinsertion of feeding tube into mock Terry Schiavo.
Ooh.
Oh, it's a ritual. Come on, the Pope. This. All right. 6 p.m. Conference adjourns.
Oh, Lord.
Now, you know, this is frightening because we're going to just segue into the real conference. And this is Reverend Rick Scarborough, and he's talking about, you know, what needs to happen and what's wrong. Okay, so let's hear that, Chris.
This nation cannot long exist in the vacuum of atheism that is now being enforced upon us publicly by the courts.
Let's hear the other one, too.
We find now that a simple alternative view can't even be taught in a public school because a judge has declared that the mention of a creator would in fact be the imposition of a religion. Wouldn't our founding fathers be fascinated by such a stretch of man's imagination?
They'd be fascinated by your religious retardation. There's no problem with teaching, you know, an alternative point of view, just not in biology class, as an alternative to truth.
That's why they have comparative religion classes, for God's sake, don't they?
Yeah, of course. You know what, Riley? They might not. You know what I mean? Is that we've talked to some people about that, and it's not as prevalent as you would think that, to put that into context. These people want to teach creationism as an alternative to biology. You know, they want to religiously retard their children by denying them a fact-based education. This is part of the culture of death. This is part of, you know, the educational death of this country. If you're a kid and someone's to say, "Hey, you want to do your homework and learn about how DNA works, or do you want to just say, God created everything?" What would you choose?
Well, I don't know what the Reverend Rick Scarborough is choosing. You know, this is very interesting. He's the interim director of the JCCCR.
A newly created front organization that just, you know, sprouted the other day.
Oh, yeah. Changing Minds and Souls is February.
This is the non-military wing of the anti-judiciary arm of this particular administration. These traitors, these anti-Americans, we're going to come back and see what they're willing to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, they are some very, very scary folks. And later in the program, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and historian David Halberstam. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm a little nervous.
Stay with us. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America. It's Friday. Man, I feel like I've been hit in the head with a hammer. Did I mention that? With a mallet. All right, look, speaking of hammers, yet another time delay story coming across the wire. This reporting that delay stumbled on some carpeting while he was at St. Peter's today, and he got the oil lobby to pay for it. What's a trip? So he tripped. He's got someone to... No? Hey, I don't know if Doug Krieger's listening, our old CEO, but there was a promise made last week, Krieger, if you can hear me, or anybody that works for Krieger. There was a promise that there would be food on Fridays. You know what I mean? Last week we had the nights of the papaya, the rolls, you know. I'm not even going to mention the name of the restaurant that gave it to us because I was told by Krieger, who used to be one of the big operatives here at Air America Radio, that there would be food on Fridays. And I don't, there's no papayas here, no box of coffee. I don't know what happened. This was a promise made to me last week by Doug Krieger.
Did he promise?
Yeah.
Or did he just say, we'll do it?
Oh, now I don't know.
Yeah.
But he said that, you know, he's going to make it happen. You know, he owns part of the restaurant. I'm not going to get into it. All right, let's move on from food to the Bible's Book of Revelations. Portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of West Covina, California. Your grace?
Heed my beseechments, thy painted harlots of Harnahab, Eshardan, and possibly the most demonic of all locations, the pretentious next level. We are in the last days of the last days, the beginning of the end times. Let me put it this way. If life were a Quinn Martin production, we'd be hearing the announcer say, epilogue. And Buddy Epson would be sleepwalking through his dialogue again. You see that guy? He's always lazy.
Come on.
It is time to prepare yourself for midnight, for your minds have become the nests of unclean squirrels, and Jesus wants his nuts back. In short, the Pope is dead, people. Now, many of you may already have seen the momentous news after having read the article on my website entitled, Pope Dead, Click Here to Find Old Classmates. Now, you may ask, Cardinal, how does this rate as an end-time indicator? Well, let me first answer by saying, relatively, John Paul was a good pontiff, considering how he led the ideological war against what I know Jesus thinks is the true axis of evil, anal sex, contraception, and hot anal sex.
Oh, man.
And during his life, he became the most respected religious leader in the world outside of Tom Cruise. But let's face it, as an evangelical born-again Christian, otatamatatapa, who occasionally speaks in tongues accompanied by acid reflux, I do have several problems with him. Firstly, he was not only a Catholic, but Polish. Strike one and strike two. Then there's his real name, Carol. Last time I looked, that was a girl's name. Yeah. And lastly, his death will herald the rise of the false prophet and the apocalypse. For it was prophesied in 1148 A.D. by St. Malachy. Yeah, St. Malachy. He was Irish. His stuff's so far out, it's not even in Revelations. And I quote it, and there will come the 111th Pope who will follow the 110th Pope who will have a girl's name. And this 111th Pope will triumphantly lead the church in its final fight against evil. In addition to actually leaving something to friends in his will, that 110th Pope, we're talking a real cheapskate here. Just a heads up. End quote. Well, there it is, you blue huffing hedonizers. In black and white. 900-year-old obscure Gaelic dialect, black and white, but black and white nonetheless. The tribulation will soon be here. If you haven't saved yourself already, go outside and throw Stucky's pecan log at a Buddhist. Maybe Jesus will notice. I'm sorry, but it's getting down on the wire here, and that's all I got for you. It's every man for himself now. Perhaps soon we'll see each other at the throne of Jesus and laugh about all this. But not too loud, or else his pet monkey will bite us in the face. Until then, fornicators, keep on fornicatoring, and we'll keep the light on for you. Until!
Wow! Nice ending. That's kind of like a little singy. Yeah. Sing-songy.
I was watching All in the Family the other day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You were doing Gene Stapleton?
A little bit. Sound a little bit like that. Cardinal, hey, quick question. I mean, why aren't you in Rome?
Yeah. Well, Rome?
Yeah. The guy's not even in the ground yet. You know, there's a lot of cardinals there wearing a similar outfit, and you're not there.
Don't you get to choose the new pope?
I do not go to where the apostate is.
Okay. All right, man.
The pope is the Antichrist.
Okay.
We know that.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
You should know that, too.
I listen. I do know that.
Uh-oh.
So what about the
he railed against everything you stand for.
Yeah, I know. But
free sex, open lifestyles,
mm-hmm.
Hedonism.
I remember you back in the day, though. I remember you, man. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I remember.
Everybody had his failings.
Do they still have Stuckies? I mean, just out of curiosity, is there still Stuckies?
If they don't, they ought to, because it's a funny word. And I'm going to keep using that word.
Okay. Can we do some news now?
Fine.
You going to sit in with us, Carl?
Talk about Tom DeLay for another 8 hours. I don't care.
Oh, here we go.
Haven't we slapped that monkey for about 7 days now?
What would you rather we talk about, the environment for 24 hours straight?
In a word,
yes.
All right. Get out of here, Carl.
Yeah, right. All right, I got to go.
Yeah, it's nice talking to you.
I hear a donut calling.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Wait, are they here? I don't see any donuts. Where's Krieger? Should be bringing donuts. Somebody should bring donuts. See what happened yesterday? We had donuts, and then I ate two donuts yesterday, swiftly sloped right into the Haagen-Dazs last night. Stupid. I need some coffee right now. So let's... Riley.
Yes.
Now, Jeb Bush wants to let anyone who wants to shoot somebody shoot somebody. Is that how this is panning out?
Well,
law in Florida?
Jeb wouldn't say it quite that way.
This is insane, this law. So you got a gun. You're a guy with a gun. Now, obviously, apparently they allow concealed weapons in Florida. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean,
it is?
Under certain circumstances.
Are you carrying a sidearm, and you're just sitting there, Riley, and all of a sudden I decide that you look at me funny. And I'm like, that dude's going to kill me. I can tell by the way he's looking at me. Boom! Or wait, I can actually do that, can I?
Yeah.
I used to be able to.
Yep. Ooh. Took a minute to fall, did he? No, this is, it's called the Kill Bill.
Okay.
After the Quentin Tarantino
film, apparently. Right.
Which just goes to show you people in Florida seem to be pretty easily amused. This is called the Stand Your Ground Bill. It allows members of the public to, quote, meet force with force, including deadly force, and defend themselves without fear of prosecution. In other words, if I think, Mark Maron, that you sitting there present a threat of death to me, I am within my rights to shoot you.
Ow!
Yeah,
come on, Riley.
I was just giving
you a dirty look.
See, the problem with this, you were talking a little bit earlier about slippery slopes.
Yeah.
This could turn Florida into a bigger Wild West state than it already is.
That's crazy, man.
It is crazy. But Jeb Bush is behind it.
He thinks it makes sense.
Is this Jeb Bush? The guy said we should err on the side of life.
Yeah.
Is this part of the culture of life? These guys are such hypocrites. See, now they know that they're ideologically being beaten because people don't want to take their crap anymore. So they're literally trying to put together their own armies. You've got this bill. You've got the militia. You've got, you know, this momentum on behalf of gun-toting whack jobs who are now, in Florida at least, have the freedom to, if they, hey, you looking at me funny? Hey, you. Hey, what's it? Don't run away from me.
Yep. And let me tell you something else. You go to certain parts of Florida, and you go along those four-lane roads with malls and stuff, or strip malls on it. Every half a block, it seems like there's a gun store.
Yeah.
You can buy a gun in Florida real easy.
Yeah. That guy took a long time.
He staggered a little bit. He was trying to get Jeb Bush out of his mouth.
That's what they're thinking, is that this is just going to escalate gun sales. It's going to give people are going to get excited. They're like, wow, I could really kill somebody. Why not get one? Democrat Dan Gelber said, quote, for a house that talks about the culture of life, it's ironic that we would be devaluing life in this bill. That's exactly what we're doing. Irv Schlossberg, Democratic representative of Boca Raton, said, quote, all this bill will do, sell more guns and possibly turn Florida into the OK Corral.
Well, see, and the scary part of this, Mark, is that there are times when law enforcement doesn't even know if somebody's got a gun. It's happened several times right here in New York.
That's right. This is a big slap in the face of the cops, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just say to people, you know, if you have a reasonable fear of death, you have the right to kill somebody with impunity. Because what constitutes a reasonable threat of death? If I go for my pocket and I'm getting ready to whip out a comb, does that make it a reasonable threat of death to somebody who's scared of black people? I don't know.
Yeah, the whole thing, it just gives me, yeah, that's exactly right, because that happens sometimes, you know, with cops.
Yes, it does happen with cops.
And the thing is that, you know, this is just part of this movement. When I connect this towards them instigating, you know, action against the judiciary, giving more people guns, this is just a slap in the face that they're trying to couch in some sort of pro-American, gun rights language. But I really think this is frightening stuff. I think this is part of the anti-American, anti-constitutional movement to sort of, you know, push out, you know, whatever they think is politically, you know, ineffective to them. But this is by arming people, giving people the right to kill people.
Yeah, and it's at a point it reinforces the notion that you settle your beefs at the end of a barrel.
Yeah.
And it's a problem, again, if you look at it in terms of America and the rest of the world, very few places in the developed world have the level of gun ownership that Americans do. And we lose people. I mean, there was a situation, some guy shot his coach in Texas.
Yeah.
Shot his son's football coach in Texas at a high school.
Yeah.
People with easy access to guns, when they get upset, when they get into a blind rage, they use them.
Yeah, it's crazy. So we're going to come back. We've got the Dog of the Week coming up. And if you're a cop in Florida and you have bad feelings about this, and this is just a long shot, 866-303-2270. It's 45 past the hour. We've got the Dog of the Week coming up, Air America Radio.
I'm Reverend Al Sharpton, and I may not be part of his diocese, but I listen to Milf Cardinal Milfington's Rapture Watch on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Wow, 50 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio. Quickly, just another breaking delay scandal. Tom DeLay, it seems someone slipped away some blotter acid. He's been walking around outside of the Vatican today, staring at trees. Onlookers say he seems to be carrying a bag of hot dogs and oranges. Just an hour ago, DeLay was seen running from the St. Peter's Basilica, and his whereabouts are now unknown. The good news is his entire trip is being paid for by Alcoa. Entire trip being paid for by... Well, you know what time it is now. It's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
All right. Mark, for the second week in a row, House Majority Leader Tom DeLay comes close to winning the coveted dog.
Uh-huh.
He's over at the Vatican mourning the Pope, but the war to save his own skin continues on these shores. And it's his birthday. And how about his Texas crony Senator John Cronin.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to link decisions by judges to recent violence against judges. Hey, fellas, how about making Texas a place where people don't shoot their son's football coach?
That'd be good.
Anyway, this week's dog isn't a person, it's a group. The Minuteman Project is a group of volunteers whose latest initiative involves watching the border between Arizona and Mexico for immigrants and smugglers crossing that border. Now, we've got people who are actually paid to do this work, but the Minuteman Project doesn't think that's good enough. These good citizens, sons of immigrants all, are patrolling the border armed. That's right, packing heat. Some say they're afraid of terrorists, not immigrants, crossing the border into the U.S. Whatever. A few problems come up right off the bat. The volunteers have been tripping sensors the Border Patrol uses to detect intruders. Then there's the question of whether they detained an alleged illegal immigrant or whether someone was playing a prank. And, of course, Minuteman organizer James Gilchrist appeared to defend white supremacist groups that may have even joined the Border Watch. Someone needs to tell these wacko weekend warriors to go to their nearest convenience stores and buy themselves a life. The Minuteman Project is the morning's edition, Dog of the Week.
Haven't they officially recalled them? They renamed themselves the Lou Dobbs Army?
Right.
We just got a call, and I want to be honest with you. We just got a call from somebody, apparently, that said, could you not call it the Dog of the Week? Because dogs are our best friends, and that deprecates dogs. That deprecates dogs. Isn't that?
I love dogs.
Yeah, I know.
Human and otherwise.
What are you going to do with that? Here, let's take a quick call from Tom in Brooklyn. Tom, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
Hey, I used to have a concealed weapons license in Florida, because that's where I'm originally from.
Yeah.
And I think all this is just public grandstanding by the politicians, because first of all, you were saying it'll encourage people to be armed. Everybody that's not in a major metropolitan area in Florida is armed.
Right. So let me just re-clarify for our listening audience. You know, Jeb Bush is trying to push through legislation that would enable anybody carrying a gun to go ahead and shoot somebody if they feel like their life is threatened without, evasive action or necessary. You know, there's a pride issue to this thing, too, Tom, isn't there?
Well, like I said, it's just public grandstanding because they're already armed. I have a concealed weapons license, and when you have a concealed weapons license, you're actually it's almost like having a commercial driver's license. You're under stricter laws.
Uh-huh.
You're not allowed to bring a concealed weapon in a place that serves alcohol. You're not allowed to bring a concealed weapons in places of public gatherings, such as political rallies or stadiums or anything like that. You're not allowed to. And many corporations like Albertsons and Publix, if you were to call off and ask them, you're not allowed to bring a concealed weapon in at their grocery stores, if you guys don't know.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom. I guess what you're saying is that it's not that easy to have a concealed weapon, first of all, and that a lot of people have them. And how is it grandstanding? I'm not sure I understood exactly.
Well, he's saying essentially that people got the guns anyway, and the law is just trying to make people look good. My question is...
Look good.
In terms of trying to keep people safe, because that's the whole point of the Florida legislature pushing this in the first place, that they are on the side of the victim in these cases.
It just seems like a slap in the face of the cops, and it seems ridiculous. So, anyways, let's recap where we're at. You know, this is a movement in our culture. These guys who claim to be the culture of life are really the culture of death. They are putting people into compromising positions at all costs. I mean, if you just think about, the bankruptcy protections being, taken away. Social Security is under attack. The Medicare is under attack. Medicaid, no private health care you can afford, no medicine you can afford, restricting victims' rights through tort reform, abortions, they're trying to make those illegal, homosexuality, they're trying to make that illegal, they want everyone to have guns and the right to kill people, public schools are being privatized, private lives are being privatized, the Ten Commandments in front of every government building and the Constitution in the trash. This is not a culture of life. A lot of these people who are operating within our government seem to be anti-American, seem to be anti-constitutional, seem to want to restrict civil rights, seem to want to exploit the dead for their own political purposes, and to keep the population constantly in a frantic state of, either borderline poverty or fear or desperation to where they can barely keep their minds together about anything, just to keep them at that point so they can maintain power, seems to be a heinous transgression on behalf of this government, and it's disgusting. And certainly in the next hour, we are going to talk a little bit more about delay. We're going to talk to David Halberstam about some of the good things about America as well.
Oh, yeah, some of the good things and some of the things that still need fixing, because David Halberstam has been writing about America for virtually the last 40 years. And he's seen a lot. He's experienced a lot. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and historian. And he's a guy I've always wanted to talk to, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's going to be... I'm looking forward to it, too. Quick, another, this never ends. Here's another Tom DeLay scandal just came in. Thanks, Brendan. Here's a report that 2 days ago, Tom DeLay's wife helped him decide between sausage and bacon at breakfast. And for that consulting work, his wife was paid $250,000. by a Republican organization.
Now,
yeah,
well, he could have got that big Burger King thing that's got everything on it.
Yeah, but it, depending on who told him, you know, who the hell knows who would have paid for that. You know, it just never stops. You know, I assume we're going to see more of this as the day goes on. But I hope he's going down. I think he is going down. We're going to talk about we're definitely going to talk about that more, because for his birthday, I'd like to see him go down. Today.
Let's hope he actually got dug into his own pocket for this papal trip. Let's just hope that.
I doubt it.
Stay with us. We're coming right back. It's Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Workers.
Yeah, six back the hour, morning tradition here on Air America Radio. Good morning, genius, philosopher, king, queen. Good morning, working class hero. Good morning, progressive utopian, no sense of humor. I hope you're having a nice Friday morning, having a little breakfast. Good morning, Mark Riley. Krieger!
You're the man!
Our ex-CEO pulled through. He promised us breakfast and every Friday, and he did it. He's one of the... owners of a city bakery here in New York, down there.
Now you tell
down
me.
There on down there on 18th Street. You know what's weird is I actually ate there yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of a. It's sort of a. I guess it's a high end kind of. What would you call it? It's a buffet, but they have bakery stuff. But they also have salmon and all kinds of salads. It's really good.
Really?
They make their own marshmallows.
Wow.
You ever had homemade marshmallows? Let's get old Krieger on the phone and give him a thank you. I love to eat, Riley. I swear to God, Passion and I, free food comes in. I was like, oh, my God, you think I'd never eaten before. Because I suffer from diminishing buffet syndrome. And I'm having it
they
right
have
now.
A buffet? I never knew they had a buffet.
It's pretty much all buffet outside of the baked goods.
Oh, wow.
But I do have it's not ringing? No, oh, wait.
We're sorry.
Yeah, that's what happened after the documentary came out. He had to change his number. So, Riley, what's going on with you this weekend? Are you going to do anything interesting, anything exciting?
Nah, I don't think it's going to be one of those interesting, exciting weekends. I went through Easter weekend, and then my wife's birthday weekend was last weekend, so we were pretty busy then.
Yeah.
But this is, whoa, I'm sorry, that number is no longer in service.
Not going to happen for Krieger. No Krieger.
Well, we just have to say thank you, Doug.
Thank you very much. It was lovely. But I do have this diminishing buffet syndrome, which I've that's how I title the disease.
What do they have at the buffet? I love buffets.
Let me explain to you the syndrome. Maybe you have it. I know that Tashman has it. I know that I have it. Like right now, even though I've had a plate of food, there's some nice pineapple, some croissants, some cherries, and some lychee nuts. Very nice spread. But I'm sitting here talking to you, but I'm wondering if just over there if there's going to be any more food. You understand? like if I know I'm going to go to a buffet, when I'm driving, I'm going, what if they run out of food? That's a problem, and I feel that about everything. What do they have there? Dude, you never been down there?
No!
They got everything. They got, like, a poached salmon. They got focaccia sandwiches. They got all different types of salad. Yesterday, I got a black rice snap pea salad. And they got baked macaroni and cheese.
What now? You know, you really got to do baked macaroni and cheese.
That's
well.
You, Riley.
That's right.
Look, you got to do it well. They do it awesome. It's a whole tray, and I'm actually getting excited because I can barely eat this stuff without feeling guilty immediately at every spoonful. But it's like a full tray with the crust on top, cooked in the oven, like it's
not American cheese though.
I don't know, Riley.
No, you'd know if it was American cheese. American cheese, macaroni and cheese with American cheese is the blandest crap in the universe. Macaroni and cheese with cheddar or Asiago or some of the other cheeses is some of the greatest stuff you've ever
I'm
had.
I'm assuming that it's one of those.
Okay.
I mean, who the hell uses American cheese?
You'd be surprised.
When was the last time I ever bought American cheese? Kalo, when was the last time you bought American cheese?
It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm talking maybe like, 8 months.
The 8 months.
8 months. See.
I don't ever use it. I wouldn't even think to buy American cheese.
Hey, man, you need,
what?
It's only in a cheeseburger.
I got nothing against America.
See?
I know what you're doing. I know where you're going with that.
Cheeseburger.
I don't eat hamburger. I think I'm going to start eating meat again.
Uh-oh.
You know what? The hell with it. I'm going to get an iPod. I'm going to go out and butcher a cow. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to break down. I'm going to get an iPod and a machete, and I'm going to go kill my own cow and cook it right up there on the plains.
Oh,
huh?
Wow.
What do you think of that?
That sounds like a good idea.
Go hang out with those guys down on the border. The militia guys.
The Minuteman Project?
Oh, the Lou Dobbs Army down on the border.
Weekend Warriors.
Yeah. So, where else am I going here? Right now. My mother. Did I tell you my mother called me? She actually,
no!
And she genuinely thought something was funny, which is unbelievable.
What was it?
Because usually, you know, she's like, I thought that was funny. Didn't everybody else? I thought that was funny, right? Was it? Well, it was just the thing when I was talking about the Air Awards yesterday.
Segment.
She said she was hysterical. You know why? Because I was talking about food. She's like, I understand that. That's my boy. Listen to my grown man child with the eating disorder. I really did a good job on that kid, didn't I? And her, I think I might do a little comedy this weekend. I'm not sure. My wife was supposed to come in today. She's not because she's got some big audition. I actually think she's selling everything in the house and she's going to disappear. That's my... You know, I think that I actually had that weird thought because remember before the show she hadn't called me.
Yeah.
I usually call her because there's a time difference and she's usually going to bed before we go on the air. But I hadn't heard from her. And in my head, it's like she's selling all my stuff and she's cutting her losses. But it was funny. She lost her. Oh, that was so sad. Should I tell you about that?
What?
Were you here when that happened?
No, what?
Oh, no. It was at the air. I get this call. She's hysterical. She's crying hysterical. I immediately thought that another cat was dead or something worse. You know? And I go, what the hell's the matter? She goes, I lost my wedding ring. And she was hysterical. She had lost her wedding ring. And literally, for the first time in my adult life, I was like, geez, take it easy. It's just a ring. Take it. It's not that big a deal.
It's not irreplaceable.
You know, and anything I buy my wife, I make sure to, sort of gauge it against her potential losing it, which is, high. You know, it's just the way she is. And the thing is also when I buy her clothes and stuff, I made a joke with her the other day because we went to we were in Lomans in San Francisco, and she's looking at purses, and I'm like, let me just ask you, baby, when you're looking at stuff like clothes and purses and stuff, are you thinking like, how would this look with coffee spilled on it? Because she spills stuff. But anyways, so she's hysterical, and it was so touching because she said, I know why. You know, she said in the midst of all this crying, she goes, because like she thought I was going to get mad. And it's interesting that there's some part of her brain. She said, it makes me realize how much I really love you.
Oh,
so how could I even ever be mad at her about that, you know? Anyways, it turns out she found her ring.
She found it?
Yeah, she found it. Someone turned it in. Now, there are good people in the world. You know, somebody turned it in.
One or two.
At the cafe, yeah. So, look at this. Another unbelievable, another delay scandal coming over the wire right here. Thank you, Brendan. Apparently, investigators are saying that a Tupperware party held by Tom DeLay's daughter was sponsored and paid for by a corporate lobbyist. Oh, yeah, and the lobbyist is Tupperware. Unbelievable. Tupperware sponsored DeLay's daughter's Tupperware party. That's weird.
Yeah.
Are they that desperate? Is Tupperware hurting? Look, here it says Tupperware bought all the Tupperware from the daughter's party. I don't get it. Who benefits here? The daughter? The
Tupperware.
That she can throw a successful party? Or is her self-esteem that low? I don't get it. Oh, wait, I see. Tom DeLay received his own Tupperware selection in a variety of pastels.
Ooh.
That's sick. I don't know. This is. Let's talk about some more of this DeLay stuff. It is his birthday. We want to wish him a happy birthday and bid him farewell as a House Majority Leader. As we're speculating that he's on this. He's on Air Force One, coming back from the Pope's funeral. And
already?
Know, no, not yet. But, I just picture. Bush smacking him in the head like the Godfather smacked Tommy. Johnny.
Oh yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Well, you can stop crying like a little girl.
But, you're assuming that the Secret Service is actually going to let DeLay into the back of the plane. They might just block him off. Hey, no, you stay over there.
He's going to be quarantined in the dunce corner.
The president's busy. He doesn't have time.
14 past the hour. Air America Radio will be back in a second.
Morning Sedition on the air. And online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Thank you. He's one of the most powerful men in Washington.
It's beneath contempt.
Famous for his aggressive bare-knuckle style of politics.
If we do not act, he will die of thirst.
Tom DeLay faces investigations in Washington and Texas.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral, universal, and I believe the source of our greatness.
Government watch groups are stepping up their calls for Tom DeLay to resign his post as majority leader.
The abuses we've seen in recent days do not reflect the views, policies, or fabric of this nation.
$57,000 all-expense-paid trip may have been funded by lobbyists, which is against the rules.
Is it ethical?
Three of DeLay's associates have been indicted.
Accusations of illegal campaign fundraising and improper ties to lobbyists.
We have the truth on our side.
Third, DeLay trip that has been called into question.
And it is the truth.
Connection with illegal fundraising.
That will win us this argument.
Two campaign organizations that financed his re-election paid $500,000 to his wife and daughter.
Is it ethical?
I feel great about it.
It's a philosophy built on values that are moral and the certain knowledge that we are all ultimately responsible for our actions.
Hey, 20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Friday. It's Morning's Edition. That, of course, is a mix done by Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey. You know that if the Pashman signature on anything has something to do with Bruce Springsteen.
Absolutely.
I hope to hell that he can get Bruce Springsteen in there, in here now. You know, you think he'd come down, play a song for us? We'd love to have him. Are you listening, Bruce? Come on, buddy. Dan Pashman would love to have you come down. Our new CEO, Danny Goldberg, should be tight with Bruce. Are we starting? I'm actually starting some sort of movement to get Bruce in. Hey, you know, I'm looking at the paper. I'm thinking, you know, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So thank God we got this damn machine, Riley.
Yeah.
This, what is it, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. There we go, from the New York Times. I'm sorry, I didn't want to step on that. I'm sorry, I didn't step on Brendan. From the New York Times, DeLay says federal judiciary has run amok. Put that in there. DeLay says federal judiciary has run amok. Translation, embattled, DeLay vows, I'm not going down alone. From WNBC, no material goods left in Pope's will. Oh, wow, no material goods left in Pope's will. Translation, Pontiff bequeaths generous inheritance of shame and guilt. From the New York Times, high rate of failure estimated for silicone breath implants. Silicone, high rate of failure estimated for silicone breast implants. Translation, new Pam Anderson sitcom given 6 weeks at best. There you go. We got David Halberstam coming up. Halberstam, that's going to be very interesting, very bright guy, intelligent writer, historian. You know, he's
a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Well-respected intellectual person.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question, Riley, because you've been on this planet a little more than I have. How come it seems to me that when the Republicans ran the Democrats out of Congress, that, you know, that the crimes are actually they were guilty of, the corruption they were guilty of, like, say, Dan Rostenkowski, you know, and Jim Wright, were much lesser crimes than even, you know, half of Tom DeLay's transgressions.
Well, in the case of Rostenkowski, he was later charged criminally and locked up for his transgressions.
Right.
DeLay has not yet been charged criminally, so people would parse that to say, well, he hasn't really been charged with any crime. In the case of Jim Wright, however, you're talking about a very different scenario. What happens in many of these cases, Mark, is that the party in power, in most instances, will try and run the levers of government. And in the case of Jim Wright, he was a Democrat from Texas, and he ran his end of the party much in the same way that Tom DeLay is. There's not that much, you know, a lot of people think that there's a Democratic way or a Republican way of being greedy and corrupt. Fact is, both sides can show some level of greed and corruption. DeLay's, however, is complicated by the fact that, A, he's consolidated, I think, a bit more power than Jim Wright was able to during his tenure as majority leader in, the 21st century House of Representatives. And people are scared to death of crossing this guy for fear that there won't be any indictment. He will remain as majority leader and will take out his revenge on whoever did not back him, either within his own party or across the aisle. And the danger to Republicans here is very clear. because you have organizations across this country, Mark, who are prepared to run ultra-conservative candidates against moderate or center-right candidates in a lot of congressional districts and in certain states as far as the Senate's concerned. If DeLay starts backing conservative, ultra-conservatives against moderates, it creates a problem even if the moderate is popular because they have to spend money to fend off the challenge.
Right.
And what ends up happening then is that in some cases they end up almost being soft against the Democrats in terms of having to raise funds between the end of a primary and the general election. So DeLay wields a great deal of power and a great deal of clout, which is why you've been hearing whispers. And you hear guys like Chris Shays, who really doesn't have to worry about his congressional seat, so you know what? There's a problem here.
He also fixed the Ethics Committee on a certain level, didn't he?
Who? DeLay?
DeLay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Ethics Committee has ceased to function because DeLay replaced people who had joined in admonishing him three different times last year with toadies,
yeah.
With people who would actually do what he said, and he would be very confident then that even if they were prepared to change the rules, so even if he were indicted criminally in Texas, he could hold on to his gig.
It's unbelievable. This guy is so dirty, so corrupt. The stink is on him. I mean, for offering political favors in exchange for votes, soliciting campaign contributions in return for legislative favors, improperly involving a federal agency in the Texas partisan matter, illegally funneling corporate funds to assist state political campaigns. I mean, it's like a list of how to be corrupt in Congress. Using a charity for children as a personal political fund, taking four separate trips costing over $250,000 total, paid for by lobbyists who wanted to influence legislation, using his political action and campaign committees to funnel over $500,000 to his wife and daughter, supposedly for their work on his campaign. I mean, this guy has taken so much advantage, and then to get out there and present himself as a guy, a moral guy. You can't have one without the other. You can't be for the people and screwing the people at the same time. That's what politicians do, but you can't be as shameless about it and not think it's going to catch up with him. And I think, you know, oddly enough, this guy is pathological. I think he's like a psychopath on some level, because I think he really believes that he's a decent Christian fella. You know, on some level, I think a lot of them do. I think that's their default mechanism. It's psychopathic. They're borderline personality disorders or something.
It's three words, Mark. Drunk with power.
Okay.
That's what we have going on here. And all I can say is happy birthday, Bugsy. You're going down sooner or later.
Yeah.
You know, one way or the other, you're not going to be the House Majority Leader at this time next year because you imagine this is a guy who had the stones to try and block legislation to deal with sweatshops and sex shops in Saipan.
And still considers
and you know, spent time at a beachside resort at the, you know, on the eye of people who wanted that legislation blocked.
You know, what's hilarious is that the entire sort of American political junket to the Pope's funeral, they're all sitting there, you know, in the middle of Rome at the funeral of the Pope, probably sitting there going, God, am I next? What's going to happen to me?
Yeah,
am
right.
I going to be able to, is DeLay going out? Do I have a shot at this? Am I going to be in trouble? Yeah, that's how they're grieving. That's the prayer they're saying. God, I hope I don't get screwed on this.
Tom who?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think Tom's going down. What am I going to do? How do I protect my ass? So anyway,
we've got David Halberstam coming up. We're going to talk about America.
Yeah.
Here on Air America.
What's good about America?
That's right. What's good about America? Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Pat Piano, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Shortly, we'll be talking to David Halberstam, the author, journalist, historian. But let's just take this quick call from Ted in Nebraska. Ted?
Good morning. The left's continued attacks on Tom DeLay are despicable. I can't believe you would assault him, this great man.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
And now, live from Radio...
Radio Halliburton, it's right and early. The conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocon. That's right, it's 10 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, submitting to the iron will of a corporation, never felt so good. So the neocons are meeting in Washington to get rid of those activist judges. Look out, liberals. Here comes the Judeo-Christian Council for Constitutional Restoration. Oh, yeah. It's good to pound the gavel. Case dismissed. So the JCCR has got judicial tyranny in the crosshairs. Say your prayers, Judge Pinko.
Oh, I'm an activist judge. I want your children to stop praying in schools. Then they should go home to watch your two lesbian mommies touch each other all over. Oh, I'm in a bad mood. I think I'll kill an innocent girl by yanking out her feeding tube. Ha ha ha. I hate God.
Stare down the barrel of this feeding tube, murderer. And look who's coming to the JCCCR party. Mr. Ten Commandments, Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore. Soul Brother Number One, Alan Keyes. Billy Schlafly. Oh, come on, fellas. She's hot. You know you want it. Oh, yeah.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Hello. Hello. All of W's favorite neocons are going to give those judges a little frontier justice. Hey, excuse me while I lock and load. Culture of life, baby. You've been sharked. Hey, 12 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis, taxes.
That's right. Right you are, caller. Tom DeLay is a patriot and a hero, so he gave $500,000 to his wife and his daughter. Big deal. You know who's against that? People who hate the family. That's right.
The homos.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry, Lance. Next time, try not to leave your face at the end of my fist. Tell it to a judge. It's 13 after the hour, time for the neocon power weather forecast. It's spring, everybody, when a young man's fancy turns to abstinence. Take the pledge, kid. Holster that soldier. That's more like it. Save it for marriage, kids. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Wright and Early.
Oh, man, I think it must have been that coffee. I had all that sugar, Riley.
Have you ever told your therapist about these blackouts?
No, because I guess I should. I guess I should. It's probably a problem. You know, I get scared because I think I might have a tumor or something. You know what I mean?
Lord.
Yeah, we never know the blackout. I'm in denial about it.
All right.
Let's not leave our guest hanging. We're very pleased to have him. He's written many best-selling books, including War in the Time of Peace, Firehouse, The Best and the Brightest. He won the Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the Vietnam War for the New York Times. This new beautiful book that I have in my hand right now, Defining a Nation, Our America, and the Sources of Its Strength, is a collection of essays about America, edited by David Halberstam. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. What was that noise that preceded us, all that shouting? God, what was that?
That was a bit of a satirical comedy on the right-wing radio personality.
If you say so.
I'm taking some shots.
Yeah, well, it was awful.
Really?
Yeah, it isn't funny and it isn't charming. I mean, I don't... That stuff's bad enough in its own, but when you mock it, you get even more strident than it is. I don't know.
What do you mean by strident?
Well, I mean, I think the noise level of a lack of civility escalates. I mean, it's not something you can mock without being worse than it is.
Uh-huh. Now, maybe...
I mean, I thought it was odious, to tell you the truth. I guess that's a geezer statement, but I
didn't... No, I mean...
I didn't find any charm in it.
Okay, well, you know, certainly there's some people that listen to our show that feel that way. But in the transition to the book, you know, in Defining a Nation, it seems like, because we spend a lot of time talking about many of the negative elements, certainly the negative forces in this country that seem to be undermining what America really stands for and what it was built upon. Do you feel that?
Well, I think this is a difficult time. I mean, I think the forces that everybody's talking about now have always been there. I mean, there's always been a collision of a more optimistic and an idealistic America with an America that is raw-edged and rough and get out of my way, manifest destiny, knock off the Spaniards in the Philippines and... Cuba, you know, they sank the main, or maybe they sank the main, or whatever.
Yeah. Fact,
there's always been two powerful strands in American life, and it's a sort, and we go back and forth. The pendulum swings between those forces and to who's winning. You could say that the tempering forces of America, driven by the Depression and great economic prosperity, dominated roughly from the 1930s under Franklin Roosevelt well into the 60s and 70s, and now for a variety of reasons the pendulum is swinging the other way, and there's a very conservative, indeed I don't even want to use the word conservative because I think so many of their economic moves are not conservative, they're radical and in a way almost dangerous, but there's a move to end the New Deal, to almost right down to Social Security, to take away all of the changes of the economic democratization, invest power more narrowly, and that's that force is at a high watermark right now.
Do you think that, I get the feeling that they almost want to erase the New Deal.
Well, I don't think that's what I'm saying, that this is, I mean, among many other things, this is an assault upon the New Deal and the different forces that were unleashed, which, by the way, brought American capitalism kicking and screaming to the zenith of our power as all kinds of people who had never been in the middle class came surging into the middle class as workers who've now had union benefits and union protection became consumers as they bought houses in Levittown and bought one car and two cars, and then not only had their house, but gradually bought, you know, if they were in Detroit, a little place upstate Michigan where they could go fishing. I mean, it was a kind of revolution, and it was great for the consumer. The danger now with so many of those jobs being shipped overseas, the industrial jobs, the jobs that allow you into the middle class, and so many of those jobs going to China or Asia, wherever, the danger now is that we're going to have a Walmartization of America where everything is, you know, very, very inexpensive. It's inexpensive because it's done non-labor in a place like China.
Yeah.
And the only people who are going to be able to afford working in there and buying there are Walmart people. I mean, we're going to Walmart the whole country.
So how does this, in relation to, I read the opening essay of the book, and it's a beautiful book, by the way. A lot of different people have contributed.
One of Russell Baker's is there, Anna Quinlan, some really, a huge number of really talented people trying to give a personal view of the American experience and the sources of, I think, our great strength, our resiliency, our elasticity, our tolerance, all those things that have made this such a haven for people who've come from another country.
Yeah, that was interesting about the essay I read. Is that I wonder how this Walmartization and this outsourcing issue. Right, you talked a lot in your opening essay about how immigrants within one generation could look forward to seeing their children
rise
sort of
above them in one sense. I think there are a couple things that are key to America's success in my lifetime. One is obviously the immigration policy. The fact that so many people came here and came with ambitions to do better and the ability to rise in one generation above your parents. The second thing it would seem to me would be the great, you know, educational system, the upper educational system, which, you know, Boston alone is the nation of Boston. California has more great universities than I think any country in Europe. The nation of California. And this idea that you could, the meritocratic society, you could not stand on wealth, previous wealth, how well your father had done. You were not a prisoner of the past. In Europe, when I was younger, if you worked for the railroad company, your father worked for the railroad company, then you did. If he was a tailor, you were a tailor. If he had gone to the École Polytechnique and had been an engineer, then maybe you could.
Sure.
There's a great line, it's one of my favorites about America, the distinguished physicist I.I. Robbie, who was part of the Manhattan Project and won a Nobel Prize, I think, in the 50s, and he had been born in Austria. And a reporter went out to see him when he won the Nobel and said, well, what did he think? And he was sort of puzzled by the question, and he had a rather heady accent, which I won't try and imitate, but he said, what do I think? I think in the old country I would have been a tailor. And I think it's that the ability to unleash the energies of individual people, the sense in this country that you can reinvent yourself, that you're not prisoner of the past, you can choose whatever name, you can go wherever you want on the country. There's a wonderful young woman who's of Romanian origins, who's a very new immigrant who works as a technologist in my doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
She came here about, 10 or 12 years ago. They won a raffle in Romania to come here, she and her family. And they didn't know anybody. No one was to meet them. They came through Kennedy and the immigration process. Without guidance, and they'd come from a communist country where everybody was always telling you what to do, where to go, what to do this, and they finished all the stuff, the fingerprinting and all the paperwork, and where the rest of us know that we go out, get our baggage, and go on, and they didn't know what to do, so she turned to sort of this official and a cop, and she said, "Where do I go now?" He looked and said, "Lady, it's a really big free country. Go wherever you want."
Okay, well, David Halverson, do you want to stay on the line with us for a minute and talk some more about the book?
Sure.
I promise nothing too odious on the break.
Sure.
We'll be back with David Halverson. The book is Defining a Nation. We'll talk a little bit more about what's good about America after this. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good news.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Good morning.
That's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to land this thing with David Halberstam is on the phone. He's the author of The Best and the Brightest, War in a Time of Peace, and the most recent collection of essays, Defining a Nation, Our America and the Sources of Its Strength. Many different writers edited by Mr. Halberstam.
David Halberstam, I wonder how, in your judgment, has America been able to accomplish what it has when, for a long period in its history, it deluded itself about having a national character, certainly with the way African Americans were treated in this country. And then beyond that, the resistance that we still seem to have toward any level of multiculturalism.
Well, I don't know that we have great resistance to multiculturalism. I think we're out there and we stumble into each other and we sort of end up, doing actually pretty well if you compare us to other countries. I think a lot of things here that are successes we think are partial failures, but then you look at other countries and there really is a kind of American spirit and egalitarianism. I mean, there's no one American national character because we're so big. We stretch 3,000 miles and you could put, and yet we assume that Maine and Southern California, Oregon and Washington and Florida will have the same view, whereas we wouldn't think that Sweden or Finland or Norway would have the same kind of character as Italy. So we're huge. We're formed by different kinds of climates and economies and attitudes and ethnic backgrounds. But having said that, I think there are sort of constant daily victories that we do have a sense of openness, egalitarianism, that is really very, very powerful. And for all the defeats, most of my lifetime, starting almost the year I grew out of college, has been to end state-sanctioned racism, political and legal, in the South, which was a huge, in effect, 10-year battle from Brown versus Board of Education in 1954 through to the Voting Rights Act of 65, and with that there's been profound change, but we also have an historic past that encumbers us. We were the only country in the world, I believe, that did its colonial period on native soil. The British, the French, the Portuguese, the Dutch did it at long distance in Africa and Asia. When that era was over, in Macmillan's phrase, the winds of change came, all they had to do was kind of cut the umbilical cord.
Yeah.
We did slavery here, and that makes us all Americans. We're right here, and we struggle with it. And it's a struggle in our lifetime, in my parents' lifetime, and it'll be in our grandchildren's lifetime, because there's economic, educational, psychological damage. But I wouldn't short sell the idea that we really do try and get on with each other.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Halberstam.
Nice to be with you.
Okay, you
thank
take
you.
Care. The book is Defining a Nation, Our America, and the Sources of Its Strength. Definitely not odious. Let's take a couple.
I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
Before we go to the phones, I have to say, what troubles me about what he just said is that I don't compare America to other countries. I compare America to what America says it is. And that's where I find America lacking.
Sure. I mean, we have a civil war going on now almost. Jana, listening in California, how are you?
Hello.
Hi,
Jana.
How are you? What's up?
I just wanted to tell you, please keep doing the Radio Halliburton business.
Oh, we're going to. You know, it just, I think it was a little early for Mr. Halberstam, and it aggravated his
tender sensibilities.
Well, but he's also part of that mainstream media that continues to kowtow to Bush, so I don't think they realize what's going on. And his idealism, as we heard in his interview, is done and over with for us, because they keep kicking our butts.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. That's a good point. It was a pretty muted idealism, though. I think she's right, and I think that you know what he's saying, you know, in light of what's going on in this country today, is a little sentimental, isn't it?
To me, yeah.
Yeah, Lauren, listening in Manhattan, how are you?
Hey guys.
Hey, what's up?
I just want to tell you, I love Halliburton Radio, and maybe playing it after an interview like that helped me wake up again. It's like sleeping on the bus. So thanks, guys. Keep it up.
All right, thanks,
man. All right, man.
Thanks. Well, you know,
wow.
I had it was an awkward moment, but I do have to defer on some level to somebody like David Halberstam, who has contributed some great literature in terms of history and in terms of journalism. And also, I despite what a lot of you people might think, I do have some respect for some people.
You do?
A little bit.
Oh.
Not much, you know. I mean, but what was I going to say? Oh, yeah? Well, listen to this, Mr. Halberstam. Good morning.
Take that.
I wasn't going to do that until now. There's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Please write these down. These are your marching orders for today. 1. Protest this weekend's Masters Golf Tournament. White guys, Georgia, Masters. It's wrong on so many levels. 2. Buy tickets for upcoming Springsteen solo tour, even though he kind of dropped the ball on the whole Kerry thing. 3. Call up CNN and say sarcastically, gee, could you guys do something on the Pope? He's dead, you know. 4. Celebrate Mathematics Education Month with this story problem. If the administration panders to the religious right to the nth degree, minus a sense of shame plus a sense of righteous entitlement, how bad will things get in Bush's second term? 5. Phrase of the day, just drop it into conversation. Gas prices are so high, we can't afford to drive the Republicans out of Congress in 2006, man. Wake up, sheeple. We're going to have to drag them out of office on public transportation.
Uh-oh.
That was too loud. Mean to disrupt anyone's delicate sensibilities. Have a good weekend.
Have a good weekend. When we come back to you on Monday, we're going to talk about treason and whether the right wing is guilty of it.
We're going to make a case for it.
Yeah, absolutely. With constitutional lawyer Edwin Kagan. Man, it's been fun. See you Monday.
Okay, buddy.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.